General Burke's Reel 7.
General, you were saying that you'd met Hobart in...
General Burke's Reel 7.
General, you were saying that you'd met Hobart in 1927, just as you were joining the Staff College at Cater, and Hobart was going back after his tour of duty as instructor. Did you have much to do with him at that particular period?
In his final year, he was an enthusiast, and when he found he was transferred to tanks, he used to come down to the guest night of the Armoured Car Company and worn in. And he talked to the various officers afterwards to get to know them. And one got to know him quite well. He took an interest in me because I was going up to Staff College in the following January.
Yes, I see. So during that final period when you were on the staff at Quetta, that's when you got to know him. And he was interested because you were a tank man.
He, of course, was a brilliant lecturer at the Staff College too. He did try to get them to take up tank warfare.
Yes. What sort of man was he at that stage?
A very virile type.
Yeah.
Very keen on horses.
Yeah.
And he had a winning pony there. He used to play polo. In fact, he was all over the place. They had a very exclusive entertainment club there. They called them the... I forget what they call them now. There's something to do with ghosts.
Yeah.
He was one of the leading knights in that.
Yes,
very generous.
Yes. Did he question you about tanks, your experience? Did he ask you about what had happened at Cambrai and things?
Yes, he did.
Yes.
He talked about it right now.
Yes. And he talked presumably about the work that you've been doing with armoured cars, did he?
He never came out with us as far as I remember. Because the two communities are very separate out. It's very difficult to understand.
Yes.
The Staff College was an integrated unit of its own.
Yes. So you were at the Staff College for 2 years and you passed out successfully. That was in 1930. Did you, you came home, I gather, across land, is that correct?
But you passed out in 1929, and I was then posted to Bangalore.
I see, yes.
To the 6th Armoured Car Company. And I was down there for about 3 months when my home leave was due, and I had arranged to come home overland with the political agent of Quetta Pashin. It was his car.
I see. Yes. The 6th Armoured Car Company, you were doing the same sort of work, were you?
Actually, I did a sort of adjutant for them because they thought I was clever.
I see, yes. And you were, after all, a staff graduate by then.
I had a very good time down there. It's a delightful station.
Yes.
And lots of big game shooting, too.
I see, yes. While we're on India, you've probably read Major Shepherd's account in the... Little Heart book. Would you say that was a fairly accurate picture of life in India? This, what you mentioned there, the big game hunting. He says it's a very, very pleasant sort of lifestyle, socially and things.
Yes, you could do that. Like all those things, the thing to do is to organise it. And if you took your section out, the troops loved it.
Yeah, I see. You took the whole
section. Oh, yes, and camped out for two days, sort of business.
I see.
Had some shooting, did an exercise.
You didn't take the cars with you?
You do an exercise on the way out to where you're going.
Oh, I see. Yes.
And then had an exercise on the way back.
Yes.
So you combined business with pleasure.
Yes.
The station was a good one, too.
Oh, fine, yes.
So that was India under the British Raj.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah. you drove back then to England. On this tape, there were fascinating experiences. Did you know which battalion you were coming back to when you came back?
No, I just was given 8 months leave.
Yes, that's a long stretch.
Well, I got 2 months I'd spent coming home, and I took a cottage down to Freshwater in the Isle of Wight. And in that autumn that I was posted to the second tanks.
Yes. That was at Farnborough.
Farnborough.
Yes. At this time you were, what rank were you at this time?
Lieutenant.
You were still a lieutenant.
I think I'm right in saying I'm the only officer in the army who passed into Staff College as a lieutenant and passed out as a lieutenant.
I see, yes.
It's all done on seniority.
Yes.
We went 8 years in the tanks without any promotion at all, practically.
Yes. Did you feel very sore about that at the time?
There's a good deal of ill feeling, but one took it fairly lightly. And the senior captain, a fellow called Molesworth, he was known as almost Major Molesworth, because he was 8 years waiting for promotion.
I see.
I'd got nearly 13 years service in.
Yes.
And I wasn't the only one.
And do you think that this was because you were tank people, or was this a general thing in the army?
Well, it was and it wasn't. When they took the transfers from infantry to tanks, they made two mistakes. There were insufficient lieutenant colonel's appointment to ensure an easy flow of promotion, and they took subalterns in regardless of their date and appointment. I went down, for instance, in 18 months, I went down nearly 100 places in 1919-1920. Because people were coming in senior.
So you just had to wait?
And yes. That caused a lot of ill feeling.
Yes.
There was a complete block.
Yes. So this was something that happened particularly to the tank corps, in fact.
It was indeed.
Yes.
And Hugh Ellis was always blamed for it, because the thing that happened when he was a boss man.
Yes. And did you... I don't know sufficiently about the army on this stage, but could you protest about that in any way?
No.
You can't?
No. You've got your bed, you lay on it.
Yes. And although there was a general feeling of dissatisfaction, there's nothing you could do about it.
There's a lot of dissatisfaction amongst the junior captains and the subalterns. The subalterns were the people who were most hardly hit.
Yes.
Because it made a big difference to your pay, too, because you were paid on your rank.
Yes.
Not on service.
And you were married and you had responsibilities.
Yes, it was very difficult.
Life was difficult. But at this stage you were still committed to staying in the tanks. So it was...
Yes, and committed also to a staff appointment because you had staff pay.
I see, yes. With the 2nd Battalion, what were your main job? What was your job there at Farnborough?
I was second in command of B Squadron,
yes.
B Company.
And what tanks were they? What equipment had you there? Would it be mainly armoured cars, was it, and light tanks? Or Carden Lloyds?
Really, I can't remember. The light tanks were Carden Lloyd carriers, quite definitely.
Yes.
We hadn't got the Vickers tank. We still got Mark V's, I think.
I see, yes. What was your impression? You'd been away from England for 5 years and you've come back now to the tank corps. Was there anything that struck you immediately? Well, that's changed, or...?
They'd tidied the organisation up a bit, and the 4th Battalion had been revised and formed as a battalion and gone to Catterick. It was a definite entity.
Yeah.
The 2nd Tanks were a definite entity. The 3rd Tanks and Lead were a definite entity. They were beginning to group themselves into battalions.
Yes. Now, the 1927 experimental armoured force had taken place while you were out in India. Did you see any visible signs, or not necessarily visible, were there signs that there were developments tactically and the actual thinking of use of tanks, would you say?
Not much down at my level. There was definitely higher up.
Yes.
The War Office, the beginning sort of talk about tank formations.
Yes.
The egg was being laid.
Yes. What sort of speciality had you developed, if at all, at that stage, as far as driving and maintenance, was it, or...?
Myself, do you mean?
Yes, yeah.
No, not as a company officer. You were liable to do anything.
Yes. You just had to sort of supervise the general responsibility. You were with the 2nd Battalion then for quite a short time, weren't you, at Farnborough, because then you were posted...
About three months.
Yes, it was a very short period. And then you were posted to a staff job on Western Command in January 1931 to January 1934. That was up in Liverpool.
Yes.
You were a tank man, although you were on the staff. What sort of opinion had they got of tanks there on this Western Command?
Well, they knew very little about them. They thought we wore a very funny hat because berries had come in.
Yes.
And if anything, I think they rather respected one.
Yes.
And then, of course, my duties had nothing to do with tanks at all.
Yes. They didn't... What I find rather interesting is that although tanks were so, from what one reads, decisively used in 1918, this doesn't seem to have affected the army thinking generally about the use of tanks. They still carried on the same way. Would you say that's correct?
I think that's a fair comment. They had no idea of tanks at all. For example, they had an exercise in Ireland, a biggish one there.
The Western Command?
Yes, Western Command had one in Ireland, because the Irish came under Western Command.
I see, yeah.
And the brigadier there who was running his platoon borrowed me because he wanted someone who could say something about tanks. And that was the sort of atmosphere.
Yes. They weren't, in fact, and you say Ireland, they weren't using armoured cars at all in any way, though, were they?
No, they hadn't got any armour at all over there.
I see.
But They had an armoured car company for a time in Dublin, at the time of black and tan trouble.
Yeah.
But they were taken away again.
So Western Command, although they had responsibility for Ireland, weren't using any armour at all?
No, they hadn't.
Yes. Now, something interesting was happening at this stage, as far as you're concerned, because each summer, I understand, you were borrowed to take part in the exercises down on Salisbury Plain of the tank brigade. How did that come about?
They always seemed to be frightfully short of regimental officers, and so when they had any specialised job, they went outside, borrowed a staff-trained officer. There were very few staff officers in the staff-trained officers in tanks then.
Very few indeed. Yes. So, as far as the actual borrowing is concerned, this was officially done through the War Office, was it?
Done by the War Office, and I think one found there that George Lindsay, who was coming on, his hand was at the back of it, possibly, because I knew him and he knew me.
Yes. Where had you met him?
Well, I met him when he was a chief instructor at schools.
Ah, I see. Of course, yes, we referred to that already. When you went down to the summer, the first time you did that was in 1931, for the 1931 exercise. What was your duties? What were you going to do?
A staff captain.
I see, yes. And what did that actually mean? What were you
I was entirely responsible for the administration.
I see.
The stores, supplies, food, and so on, workshops,
and
all that sort of business.
Yes. You also mentioned, I think, earlier on that you'd had a job at that time of going round about the damage, is that correct?
Going round?
Looking after the damage that the exercise had done, is that correct?
Yeah, but that came under staff captain's duties.
I see, yes.
There's a question of really finding out what the farmers always put in for the maximum, because that was their sort of holiday money.
Yes, I see. Yes. Did you take part in the actual discussions about the sort of tactical work or anything like that at the time?
Oh yes, they discussed it at length, particularly in the evenings.
Yes.
And the staff came in on that.
Yes. And Broad was running this at the time, wasn't he?
Broad was very interested, and he was very helpful too.
Yes. And you worked quite closely with him, did you? And Hobart?
Very closely. He used to go home at night to bed, but he was most helpful, and he was very good too.
Yes, that's Broad.
That's Broad.
Yes.
They had all those sort of top transfers, Lindsay, Broad, Pyle, Hubbard, they were all in on it.
Yes. And some of those were in fact at the time working in the War Office, but they came down for the exercises.
They came down for these exercises. Yes.
What was your opinion at the time of this idea of having, although this hadn't happened at the time, but of all tank brigade, the idea of having an all tank?
Well, that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
But the opposition, see, money's always been short. And they knew, the rest of the army knew that what money we took didn't come their way. And the amount of opposition one met, particularly from the gunners and the cavalry, was simply terrific.
You encountered this, did you?
Oh, yes, indeed.
At this time, or was this later on when you were...
Yes, no, at that time, it was growing up.
Yeah.
They're personally, they're pleasant to me, but the opposition was there right now.
Yeah, you recognised what
you... Oh, yes, it was...
Yes. At this 31 exercise, I can't quite remember now, did you have infantry as well working with you at that one?
I cannot remember. No, we had infantry in one of them because we had them in lorries.
Yes.
And they always got a bit behind.
Yeah.
But I cannot remember which exercise it was. It was probably the 31.
Yeah. There has been some criticism of the umpiring of them, these exercises, that they...
Well, the 32 or 33 one, Jock Burnett Stewart was the Commander-in-Chief of the Southern Command. He ran the exercise, and it was all aimed at proving how vulnerable tank formations were and how pretty useless they were.
Yeah, you felt that at the time, did you?
It was done. It was his avowed intention.
Yeah, and you and your group, as it were quite upset about this, were you?
Well, you found yourself blockaded all over the place.
Yes. Did you, when you were doing those exercises, one of the reports that's come out of them was that the armour terrorised, if you like, the infantry. They kind of, when they actually went in and operated against infantry on these exercises, that they completely, stopped them. Did you find that infantrymen, cavalrymen were demoralised, as it were? I mean, one of the reasons that Stuart apparently worked against the...
I think for the first time that the people down there really woke up to the fact that tanks were a menace on the battlefield and could manoeuvre too. They were just beginning to realise it, and they didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
And there was a certain amount of morale effect on it.
Yeah. Did you have post-mortems, as it were, on what had been done each day? Were there reports made out or things like that?
Well, they had the end of each exercise, they had a conference.
Yeah.
And they sort of hammered the thing out, more or less.
Yeah.
It was all... That was useful.
Yeah. Equipment-wise, was there a lot of breaking down, maintenance problems? I mean, was that part of the thing that you had to think about?
A certain amount of tank trouble. But we, looking back on it, in retrospect, the amount of breakdowns and so on and so forth were infinitesimal. Because the people manning the tanks and the lorries and so on and so forth were very high-grade regular soldiers.
Yeah.
And they were all experts, and they kept things going in the most extraordinary way.
Yeah.
But you did find bits of tank littered about the plain.
Yes. Did you find that the light tanks, I mean, this mix-up of different, mixed battalion idea, did you find that this was working, or was there...
Yeah, but it was sound, because the light tanks acted as reconnaissance for the medium tanks. And they were reasonably fast, and they got about all over the place. They had no enemies.
Yeah. What about the developments at this time on communications and things? Were they working on that?
Oh, he was working hard on it.
Yeah.
And Hobo was a tremendous influencer. We were getting wireless for the first time and getting wireless in on speech, yeah, as opposed to key.
Yeah.
And there was considerable advance made in those 3 years, 31, 32, 33.
Yes. During those exercises, I understand you met Little Heart for the first time, is that right?
Met Little Heart, I'm not quite certain which one it was. It was 31 or 32, the Central Hotel Andover.
Yeah. And you met him socially, did you?
Well, I met him in the evening. Come back there to dinner.
Yeah. What approach had you got to him? I mean, he was a journalist working...
Suspicion.
Yes, I see.
Highly suspicious, I regard him. But he wanted to know such an awful lot about what he shouldn't know. But one got to know afterwards that admittedly he was just a professional historian.
Yes, yes. But you regard him at the time as a journalist, and was he the only journalist there doing this?
He was the only one.
He was the only one that you came across, yes. What about Rudyard Kipling? Wasn't he around there at that time, or was it...
Rudyard Kipling expressed a desire to see tanks at Till's Head, and they had him there. I was away with John Crocker. I didn't see him until they brought him in to dinner at night in the mess. And he was most offensive about tanks. They were noisy monsters and they were wrecking the countryside.
Oh, I see. It was a sort of ecological mission he was on. Yes.
But he was great fun.
Yes. When you... these were the summer months, and then you went back to your...
Chester.
To Chester. Were you questioned about what had been going on down in Salisbury, or was there any interest?
No interest at all.
I see.
They regarded more or less as leave.
Yes, I see. There was no general sort of thinking, well, here is...
No.
There was no general broadcasting going on about what was happening down there in tanks.
No, the only time they did anything like that was, it must have been just in my last year there, they had a far-seeing commander-in-chief called Cyril Devereux, who's afterwards CIGS. He had a biggish exercise at Chester, and he dragged in... he was infantryman,
yeah,
South African type, but he dragged in tanks there, and he ran a very good exercise.
Yes. In January 1934, you finished on the Western Command Post. Did you, you were then posted to the 1st Light Tank Battalion at Till's Head?
That is an innovation. They just got permission to form a light battalion, and they weren't allowed to increase the establishment, and so they formed a battalion by taking the light companies, so the cardinoid companies from each of the three regular battalions, 1st, 2nd and 3rd.
Yes, I see.
And they called that the 1st Battalion, 1st Light Battalion.
Yes. So it was while you were with them that you took part in the 1934 exercise. That would be correct, would it? You were there with them till...
I was there for the 34 exercise, yes.
Yes. Now these were quite... this was the first all-tank...
tremendous advance.
Yes.
And of course, Herbo was commanding the brigade, and the wireless was going to, the communication was going, there were tactical formations. It was quite an eye-opener.
Yeah, what tank did you have in that
exercise? I have a second in command of a light tank company.
I see, yes. And you were linked with radio with him?
Yes, we had much more fun than the other battalions, because those in the medium tanks were just going slowly. They never got about very much.
No.
Light tanks went all over the plane.
Yes.
Had tremendous time.
Yes. You were, in fact, working on the basis of trying to get as much manoeuvrability as possible, were you?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you work on this business of the Lieger idea, though, the Lager, the harbouring thing?
Oh, yes, we did that almost every time we went out.
Yes.
And camouflage, breaking up into Liga or Lager, whatever you'd like to call it. All those things were practiced, and we did a lot of night work too.
Yes.
Bringing the B echelons up to the fighting tanks.
Yes.
And then getting them away again before daylight.
What were you using for light then? Just ordinary lights, ordinary headlights sort of thing?
No, we had no lights for most of the exercises. And the tail lights, we had to have tail lights on the piece. They were painted blue, so that they give no reflection at all.
I see, yes. And Hobart directed this himself.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. You had a briefing every day, did you, on this with him?
Much worse than that. I had to write most of his exercises. Because John Crocker was a brigade major. He was busy doing brigade major. And Hobart took me as a sort of writer of exercises for him.
I see.
In addition to my duties as signaling commander of a company.
So when you'd finish that during the day, you had to go over to see him and
write... Go see him, yes. He used to leave word, so he wanted to see me.
I see.
We knew him, saw him at 5 o'clock or whatever time
I see.
Was.
And he would give all the notes that he'd made during the day, had he?
That's what happened.
I see, yes. So in fact you started to build up quite a close friendship with him. What would you say was the principal aim he was driving at this period, would you say, as a...
Mobility and the general direction, the general handling of armoured formations.
Yes.
Because he'd never had armoured formations before.
This, you mean by that, you mean drills and things, do you? I mean,
yes, and sweeps round to the flanks, a change of directions, and things like that in a big scale.
Yes, yeah. He outlined this as an intention, did he? He talked to, well, people like yourself, did he, at this stage? I mean, each morning you were brought in, were you, to discuss this, or was there...
Yes, what used to happen was he used to say what he wanted to do, say, in 2 days' time, and leave you to get on with the argy-bargy about it, the writing and so on and so forth. You'd then go off and upset somebody. John Crocker would have been something else. You'd have your exercise in 2 days' time, and then he'd have a conference, had a conference after everyone. And everybody used to be there, and he was very searching. And that'd be about 4 o'clock. And then you see, start again, another one. And that went on for 3 weeks. It was the most exhausting performance.
Yes, and it's very often they'd start off after four to do another one in the evening, or at night.
Yes, that'd be got ready the day before.
Yeah.
You'd have a night in. The only people who got any rest were the troops.
Yeah, but you as officers were...
The staff got none at all.
Yeah. What about armament at this time? Was it? Did he concentrate much on the actual firing on...
You couldn't use your guns on the plane. It was too limited. I mean, it was too dangerous. There were no danger areas to cover it. But the light tanks had an ordinary Vickers machine gun in it.
Yeah. Was there any move about how to fire the gun, in fact? Was it firing on the move was the main principle, or was there any developments in
this?
There was
a big argument about firing on the move. There was... Part of the people thought it was important to be stationary, make quite certain of hitting the other fellow. And the others worked out that if you could hit a chap on the move, you could hit him stationary. There's an argument about it. But the amount of shooting before the war was nil.